The failure of drug war is glaringly obvious to judges, cops, wardens, prosecutors, and millions more now calling for decriminalization, legalization, the end of prohibition. Let us investigate the Century of Lies.
Hello, and welcome to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. The United Nations Commission on Narcotic Drugs held its 68th session in Vienna, Austria, back in March. A number of side events took place during the session that were organized by member nations, UN agencies, and civil society organizations. Some tremendously important discussions and presentations. This week, let's start with a side event entitled Addressing Gender Inequalities and Compounding Vulnerabilities in Drug Policy, which was co-organized by the Schoon Addiction Center, the Middle East and North Africa Harm Reduction Association, and Frontline AIDS. Let's start with opening remarks by Boyan Konstantinov, Policy Specialist, HIV, Health and Development at the United Nations Development Program.
We all read the World Drug Report. I hope we do. In 2024, it again highlighted how women who use drugs face systemic barriers to accessing treatment, a reality which is compounded by stigma, by discrimination, and punitive legal frameworks. I remember one fact that despite women making up nearly 40% of the people who use amphetamines, account only for 20% of people who receive treatment. A huge gap, which reveals, illustrates the deep flaw in our health and social support systems. We know that many women avoid seeking care due to fear of criminalization, losing custody of their children, or facing violence either at home or from the authorities. Women who use drugs also experience significantly higher rate of intimate partner violence and sexual violence. A woman who injects drugs is up to 10 times more likely to be living with HIV compared to a man who injects drugs due to the intersecting vulnerabilities such as economic dependency, social stigma, lack of access to harm reduction services. And these are, of course, numbers, but they also represent real lives and real people whose health and rights continue to be ignored. Youth, particularly young women, girls, as well as gender diverse young people, they face higher risks as early drug use is often linked to experiencing trauma, poverty, exclusion. We saw what happened during the few days of the COVID pandemic. Yet, young populations remain underserved by harm reduction and treatment services, which are traditionally designed for older populations. And their needs, including in the context of gender, are not always taken into consideration. The evidence is clear. Criminalization does not reduce drug use. It only exacerbates harm. Nearly 7 million people were in contact with the criminal justice system for drug-related offenses, as we heard many times over the past few days, and two-thirds of them were for personal possession. That doesn't yield very good public health and human rights result, and also cost an enormous amount of money, as we can well imagine. Women who use drugs are disproportionately affected with higher rates of incarceration for nonviolent drug offenses. And once in prison, they face compounded risks, such as limited health care, exposure to violence, inadequate access to harm reduction. For pregnant women, the situation is even worse. Many are denied essential care. Many are forced to give birth in degrading conditions. Many are separated from their newborn children. The international guidelines on human rights and drug policies, I hope you heard about them at least a couple of times over the past few days. They make it clear that drug policies must be aligned with international human rights obligations, including the right to health, including non-discrimination and gender equality. States must take concrete steps to eliminate these barriers that prevent women from accessing harm reduction and healthcare services, and to ensure that legal and policy frameworks prioritize public health over punitive approaches. We're not there yet. This means that we must move away from these carceral approaches and invest in health and social justice responses that work. We must ensure that harm reduction services, ranging from needle and syringe exchange, opioid agonist maintenance therapy, overdose prevention, are fully accessible to women and gender diverse people. We must also integrate reproductive health services into drug treatment programs, so women do not have to choose between seeking care for their drug use or their pregnancy. And we need to meaningfully include women as well as gender diverse people who use drugs in policy making, ensuring their voices are heard and their experience and expertise are recognized and used. To advance gender responsive drug policies, we must listen to the voices of the people who are affected. We must push for decriminalization of drug use, scale up harm reduction services tailored to women and gender diverse people and youth, and ensure that policies uphold their rights rather than punish them. This is not just a health issue. It is a development issue, it is a gender issue, and above all, it's a human rights issue.
That was Boyan Konstantinov, Policy Specialist, HIV, Health and Development at UNDP, delivering opening remarks at a side event entitled Addressing Gender Inequalities and Compounding Vulnerabilities in Drug Policy that was held recently at the 68th session of the UN's Commission on Narcotic Drugs in Vienna, Austria. One of the presenters at this was Emily Christie, Senior Advisor in Human Rights and Law at UNAIDS.
So as you know, in 2021, we had a new global AIDS strategy. It had specific targets for people who use drugs. The biomedical targets included coverage of 200 sterile needles and syringes per person, as well as 50% opioid agonist therapy, as well as access to combination prevention, and of course the 95-95-95 targets on treatment and testing. As you know, it's difficult to pull together a complete picture for women who use drugs because disaggregated data is scarce. A lot of the time when we ask around this and trying to get more data, people will say they're difficult to find, or the numbers that we have are so small that it's difficult to report on. So more work really does need to be done around this to make sure that we can ensure women are represented in the data that is there. And great to hear that there's been some studies done, and I look forward to reading that one as well. So thank you for doing that work. What we do have does indicate a continued elevated risk of acquiring HIV and a reduction in access to services for women compared to men. So we reported last year, if we just look across everybody, all genders combined, we reported that the median prevalence amongst all people who use drugs is around 5%, which is 7 times that of the adult population generally. And it's 8% of all new infections in 2022, which is what you can see on the screen, just slightly higher than it was in 2010. There's only 18 countries that actually report disaggregated data on prevalence. And what we have amongst those 18 countries is that it's almost twice as high among women. So it's 8.5% prevalence amongst men, 15% amongst women who inject drugs. If we look at access to services, while there does seem to be parity in the use of sterile needles at last injection, at least in the data that we have, for the 9 reporting countries with gender disaggregated data on opioid agonist maintenance therapy, coverage is 9.4% for men and 3.4% for women. Both are still really low considering that the target is 50%, but you're seeing almost 3 times lower for women than for men. Within the global strategy, recognizing that access is not simply about availability, but also affected by stigma, discrimination, criminalization, and a lot of the factors that Boyan just spoke about as well that prevent women in particular from accessing services, the strategy includes the societal enabler targets, which you saw earlier. So if we can go to the next slide, this is a little bit hard to read, I recognize, but these are the 3 main targets in the societal enablers in terms of stigma and discrimination. So you've got on the left, avoidance of healthcare, in the middle, experiences of physical and sexual violence, and on the right, you've got experiences of stigma and discrimination in the past 6 months. This is all amongst people who inject drugs. The target is the red line, which is 10%. So anything below that are countries that have reached the target. Anything above it are those that haven't. You can find this graph in our Global AIDS Update report and in the fact sheet that we did at the same time around people who use drugs. So you can have a look at which countries are which. We don't report publicly in this update report on disaggregated data because the numbers that we receive are so small. But you can find it on the Key Population website. And so I did a little bit of digging with our DFI team. And to just give you an idea, if we're looking at countries where we're looking at experience of stigma and discrimination, in 4 of the 5 countries with data, the experiences were higher amongst women than men. If you're looking at avoidance of healthcare, There were 12 countries that had disaggregated data, and it was higher again for women in all but three. And then if you're looking at violence, it was high for women in six out of the seven reporting countries. I know that's a lot of different numbers, but basically what we're saying is in the majority of reporting countries with disaggregated data, experiences of stigma, discrimination, violence, and avoidance of healthcare are higher amongst women who use drugs compared to men. Please use these data with caution. Some of the denominators are below 100. So it's got a lot of uncertainty bounds in there. We also know from GMP Plus in their analysis last year of the stigma index that stigma and discrimination is higher in non-HIV services compared to HIV services for people who inject drugs. And this is going to have a significant implication when we're looking at the funding cuts and moves towards integration that we're seeing in some countries. UNAIDS also supported ICW to do a global scan on coercive reproductive practices against women living with HIV, and this included women from key populations. And this found that women with a history of drug use were more likely to experience coercive practices in terms of SRHR than women without a history of drug use. And so this is including things like forced or coerced sterilization, requirements to be on contraception, and if you are wanting to take HIV medication, and also coercion in terms of pregnancy and feeding practices. So moving on to decriminalization, we do have the target that, it's not quite this slide, but you can keep that one up. We do have the target that countries, less than 10% of countries criminalize small amounts of drugs. And actually the broader target is generally more about removing those punitive laws and policies that create barriers to accessing HIV services. So when we're talking about decriminalization, it's a much broader look at what are those punitive laws that are impacting on access when we're looking at law reform. And we know that there is a disproportionate impact on women who use drugs and higher rates of incarceration. So only 29 countries are reporting to UNAIDS that they do not criminalize possession of drugs for personal use. And if we're looking at data from community groups, it's 39, which is not that much more and still far below the target. We also see high rates of criminalization in terms of LGBT communities and sex workers, which we know has a multiplying effect where you have people who are members of different key population groups together because the law enforcement practices aren't always targeting you for the particular criminal law that you think they are, as we know. So this is the one on community leadership within the response. And that community-led organizations should be involved in decision-making. And we're talking about advocacy around societal enablers, it's supposed to be around 80% leadership or involvement. And what is being shown on this graph here is actually when you're talking about people who inject drugs and communities led by people who use drugs, they are the second most excluded group out of key populations, people living with HIV. The only one that is more excluded are prisoners. So what this is all saying in a very depressing way, sorry, is that for people who use drugs, particularly women who use drugs, we're nowhere near meeting the 2025 targets, which are for this year. And with recent changes to funding, it's very likely we're going to fall further behind. Of course, work is being done and continues to be done, not only to make sure that people are able to access services, but generally around access for women who use drugs. UNODC released guidance last year on gender-based violence for women who use drugs, which has a lot of information there generally around how to make sure services, harm reduction services are accessible. And UNAIDS was also involved in that. We know that countries such as Kenya, Brazil, and Nigeria have policies and harm reduction services that are specifically aimed at women. And of course, as Boyan mentioned, there's the International Guidelines on Human Rights and Drug Policy. So just the final slide on moving forward. We know that things need to change in terms of how we do harm reduction, how we do HIV services for women who use drugs to make sure that they are more accessible. Final slide. And we have a new strategy that's being developed this year. And this is where it's my turn to ask the audience here to get involved. The strategy will be an open and accessible one for everyone. There will be a survey that is going online in the next couple of weeks, so keep an eye out for that. We are also going to be doing regional and global consultations. If you have questions around that and how to get involved, you can contact me or you can contact through the organisers here, and we can put you in touch with the people who are running the strategy process. You can also run your own consultations and send through submissions to us, and particularly in relation to the topic that we're talking about today and what that is going to look like in the future, and how do we create a response for the next 5 years that gets us to 2030 and doesn't leave women who use drugs behind. We really would love to get everyone's inputs into that to make sure that women who use drugs are at the center, are in leading positions in relation to development and implementation of programs, that services are adapted and appropriate, and that we make sure that human rights are at the center of that.
That was Emily Christie, Senior Advisor in Human Rights and Law at UNAIDS, speaking at a side event entitled Addressing Gender Inequalities and Compounding Vulnerabilities in Drug Policy, which was held recently at the 68th session of the UN's Commission on Narcotic Drugs in Vienna, Austria. We'll hear more in a moment. You're listening to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. Another presenter at this powerful side event was Angela McBride, Executive Director of the South African Network of People Who Use Drugs.
So at Sandpoint, in our organization, working with our community, it's all about advocacy and action. We look at addressing the harms that punitive policies play in the lives of women who use drugs, such as targeting women who are homeless and or unemployed, and stigmatizing women based on what we choose to do with our body. Whether it's judging a mom, judging a fellow, turning someone away from services. But that doesn't achieve anything. If anything, and we know, we saw a few of our panelists have even mentioned, there's so much research that shows stigmatization, judging, that just leads to more harm. It leads to people not being willing to access services. And that just builds up, and it's avoidable harms. So instead of stigma, instead of judgment, rather action, inclusion, and compassion. We have worked with some incredible partners, STAND, TBHIVK, a lot of amazing harm reduction policy programs and organizations that give us support, that stand alongside us as allies. And also some incredible networks in South Africa of as people who use drugs. And some examples of this is some of the work, as well as the toolkits and trainings that target healthcare workers for sensitization, law enforcement trainings, and then also trainings and sensitization for key role players and stakeholders. An example is the Pregnancy and Substance Use Toolkit. Shout out to Julie and colleagues who pulled this together, as well as community advocacy initiatives that bring communities from all walks of life together. A shout out to Shani Roberts back home. She has led on this amazing advocacy initiative for a few years now, called FemAlive. We come together, we invite communities, women, we get packs together, we hand out from anything from sanitary pads to t-shirts, and then also bringing law enforcement together in a different space. There was an amazing session where there's plans for self-defense, having a police official coming and chatting with us at this space prior to the walk, around how better to protect ourselves. And it's just through copious amounts of advocacy, a lot of passion, a lot of love, that we're able to engage role players like specific police officers in areas, so that we can again move away from this punishment and looking more towards supporting people. The FemAlive walk is really something beautiful, and just one of the many examples. And the last one is something we did a few years ago, which is activities again for women by women, where we went out and we aimed to remind one another that no matter what, no matter who you are, what you do, You're worthy of love, deserving of rights, and beautiful. And that was, yeah, we, and I think maybe we can move on to the next slide. It's a little bit, it's not as positive, but if we can move on one more. Unfortunately, this isn't as positive, and it's just kind of coming back. I think a lot of people have been raising this, but the termination of grants from the USA, as well as Europe, or a number of European countries redirecting their funding, is threatening lives of communities, and it's impeding on really incredible work, life-changing work, life-saving work. Methadone is a life-saving medication. Needles and syringes, safe stimulant packs, it's life-saving and life-changing. And this has been either ended or is on the brink of being ended. And also, it's peer-led programs that are suffering, not just organizations or civil, So just quotes and shout out to Catherine Cook from Harm Reduction International, Harm Reduction International, and everyone who helped bring some of these key points together is community organizations and peer workers, the backbone of harm reduction services, are the hardest hit. These cuts are cruel and short-sighted. Treatment will cost governments and donors far more than continuing this life-saving prevention services. Therefore, we implore that governments step up and use the basic budgets to close the service gaps and support community-led and civil society harm reduction. Donors must prioritize strong pledges to the Global Fund, and governments and donors must stop spending vast amounts of money on punitive approaches and invest in harm reduction. So in summary, we need to be removing biases, expanding on sensitizations and conversations. We need to be prioritizing human rights, collaborating with role players, coming together and creating change together, but also embracing humanity, including flexible funding that is peer-defined, peer-implemented, and of course, peer-driven. And that's the only way we can ensure meaningful involvement. That's the only way we can ensure meaningful change.
That was Angela McBride, Executive Director of the South African Network of People Who Use Drugs, speaking at a side event entitled Addressing Gender Inequalities and Compounding Vulnerabilities in Drug Policy, which was held recently at the 68th session of the UN's Commission on Narcotic Drugs in Vienna, Austria. You're listening to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. While we still have time, let's hear one more speaker from this timely side event. Teresa Castro is a social worker and peer collaborator at Cosmicare in Portugal.
So I come from a very different context from the other panelists. So I want to begin by acknowledging my privilege as European, cisgender, white woman, with family support, with the stable housing and employment. These are all advantages that many do not have. I would also like to highlight how no woman who uses drugs exists as a singular and isolated identity. I'm a young person, I'm a woman, I'm a social worker, I'm a person who uses drugs. This complexity shapes my experiences, challenges, and perspectives. However, as a social worker working in harm reduction in a country recognized for its progressive drug policy, I witness firsthand the realities faced by marginalized women. While Portugal's decriminalization model has significantly improved the health and well-being of people who use drugs, today's discussion is an opportunity to reflect on the challenges that different communities still experience, such as disproportionate violence, institutional barriers, and trauma. I have seen how this population is excluded from shelters, including those for survivors of intimate partner violence. In many cases, abstinence is still a requirement, and cis heteronormative rules do not respect gender identity and expose people to further harassment and violence. There are approximately 50 accommodation responses with 800 places for survivors of intimate partner violence, but there is only one with 9 spots, which is constantly full, dedicated to trans and gender diverse individuals. These strict binary policies also exist in the prison system and restrict access to proper healthcare. I understand why this community in particular distrusts my profession. Social workers should advocate for clients' rights, yet too often are used as agents of surveillance and control. To build a trusting and horizontal relationship with service users, I found that being and disclosing that I am a young woman who uses drugs helped me to bridge gaps, even if our drug use patterns and contexts may differ. I have experienced how young women who use drugs face compounded stigma due to adult centrism, being labeled as irresponsible and immature, which is used to deny our autonomy and decision-making capacity. This perpetuates moralistic and paternalistic interventions that prioritize prevention and abstinence. In Portugal, people who are caught with a quantity of drugs that's considered for personal use must present themselves at dissuasion committees, structures that offer an alternative to courts. In 2022, it's the latest data we have, most cases resulted from cannabis use possession. Most individuals were classified as non-dependent, and most were young people between 16 and 29 years old. The percentage of referred women was the highest since 2013. Those classified as dependent can have their process suspended if they agree to treatment. So this system maintains the idea that drug use has to be punished and contributes to stigma and social exclusion. At the same time, patriarchal narratives dismiss women's pursuit of pleasure, reinforce gender power imbalances, and negative stereotypes. Harm reduction is still focused on adult men who inject opioids and overlook the specific needs of diverse genders, ages, substances, and routes of administration. So, to conclude, I would like to highlight three recommendations for addressing gender inequalities and vulnerabilities in line with the international guidelines on human rights and drug policy. So, to develop inclusive intersectional policies, currently the public funding mechanisms don't allow for intersectional approaches. So they should ensure that meaningful participation and leadership from affected communities is possible. The services must be gender and age responsive, trauma-centered, low threshold, free from conditions like abstinence or age restrictions or parental consent. These only marginalized people. It must be offered training for healthcare providers and social service workers. The second, address social determinants of health. So as a social worker, this is very important for me to stress this systemic barriers that prevent people who use drugs from improving their lives. Women may face economic inequality, financial dependence, violence, discrimination. And acknowledging these factors will allow us to address root causes and design effective harm reduction strategies. The last, to go beyond decriminalization. While it is an important initial step towards reducing harm, it does not eliminate stigma by itself. It does not eliminate institutional barriers or the lack of tailored services. If it's not accompanied by a structural reform that guarantees access to services and protection against discrimination, it will only serve as a means to alleviate negative legal consequences. So we must see it as the beginning of a broader transformation rather than the final solution.
That was Teresa Castro, a social worker and peer collaborator at Cosmicare in Portugal, speaking at a side event entitled Addressing Gender Inequalities and Compounding Vulnerabilities in Drug Policy, which was held recently at the 68th session of the UN's Commission on Narcotic Drugs in Vienna, Austria. We'll have more next week. For now, that's it. Thank you for joining us. This has been Century of Lies. I've been your host, Doug McVeigh. Century of Lies is a volunteer production for Community Radio, syndicated via the Pacifica Foundation Radio Network's Audio Port service. Please support your local community radio station. Become a member. Become a volunteer. We'll be back in a week with 30 more minutes of news and information about drug policy and the failed war on drugs. For now, this is Doug McVeigh saying so long. So long! For the Drug Truth Network, this is Doug McVeigh asking you to examine our policy of drug prohibition, the Century of Lies. Drug Truth Network programs archived at the James A. Baker III Institute for Public Policy.